Blog Talk Radio.
You walk into the room with your pencil in your hand. You see somebody naked in you. Say, who is that man? You try so hard, but you don't understand just what you will say when you get home. Because something is happening here, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You raise up your head and you ask, is this where it is? And somebody points to you and says, it's his. And you say, what's mine? And somebody else says, well, what is? And you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You hand in your ticket and you go watch the geek who immediately walks up to you when he hears you speak and says, how does it feel to be such a freak? And you say, impossible, as he hands you a bone. And something is happening here, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? Lumberjacks to get you facts when someone attacks your imagination. But nobody has any respect anyway. They already expect you to all give a check to tax deductible charity organizations. With the professors and they've all liked your look. With great lawyers you have discussed lepers and crooks. You've been through all of F. Scott Fitzgerald's books. You're very well read, it's well known. But something is happening here and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? Well, the sword swallower, he comes up to you and then he kneels. He crosses himself and then he clicks his high heels. And without further notice, he asks you how it feels. And he says, here is your throat back, thanks for the loan. And you know something is happening, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? Now, you see this one-eyed midget shouting the word now. And you say, for what reason? And he says, how? And you say, what does this mean? And he screams back, you're a cow. Give me some milk or else go home. And you know something's happening, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? and then you frown. You put your eyes in your pocket and your nose on the ground. There ought to be a law against you coming around. You should be made to wear earphones, 'cause something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
Hello, my freaky darling, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Sterling Gettett, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Neutron tomorrow as the After Midnight Bomber. Then delve into a world of strange magic with Incoherent Dust of Victoria Frost. Friday's the split between Falling Into the Darkness with Pam and Break On Through. And then on Saturday morning, join Aphasiana and Babla as they teach you the fine art of art sinner, art saint. And on Monday mornings, join Victoria Frost with Hearts of LNP or Black Lace Diaries. These shows are designed to call outside the lines of rich, raw emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your mind. I'm Rex, my co-host Pam Ray, and I can't wait to get into and give you your word. How you doing, Pam? Oh.
Well, so far, so good. Just had a nice kind of relaxing day. Spent, some time with my daughter and... And right now I'm just looking forward to the poetry. I'm just really like that song. I stumbled across it by accident. I can't even remember what it was I was searching for. And I looked at the lyrics and I listened to it and I thought, I think this has potential for an After Midnight prompt. And we didn't get a huge amount of rights in the contest, but I really feel what we do have is some really awesome quality and going to be really fun to delve into. And how about you? How are you doing?
Too bad.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear that. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and bring Babbler on to join us, and we can get the party started. Hey, Babbler.
Hey,
good
hey,
to
hey.
Have you join us. Good.
Thanks
how's
for
it going
having
you?
Me.
Absolutely.
I'm all right. It's Monday.
I know that feeling. Well, weekends are my Mondays. So when Monday comes around, I'm like, woohoo! But I know how most people usually feel about Mondays. So.
That's all right. That part of my day is over. So.
Good. Now it's the fun. Oh, you shush. No mentioning Tuesdays.
Well, it is Tuesday because Monday's already gone.
No.
Okay,
me,
well, for some of you it has.
Right.
Yeah, I think me and Babbler are actually both
midnight.
Still.
All right.
Yep.
Well, shut.
Still, right?
Well, son of a bitch, that didn't work out too well. Don't give it an hour.
No, no.
You'll be
you know
the
what?
Limit.
You know what you should do? Just wait another 2 hours and make the joke again, and then it'll work.
Why then? It won't have any bloody impact. It'll be dead.
In 2 hours? That's impending.
Well, no. The joke won't have any impact at that point because it's already been used.
Oh, okay. I thought
joke
you meant you were
going
to be dead in 2 hours. I'm like, wow,
oh, no.
Are we predicting our deaths now?
We're getting real dark.
Yes,
okay.
I've got the rope suspended from my ceiling. I'm just waiting for the right time.
And he's waiting for that moment where I make some snarky comment at him, and then he's like, now's the time. It's all your fault, Pam.
Kick the chair. No.
Okay. I suppose we better, all right, we better get ourselves under control and let Rex have some sort of control over his show. So.
I think I've done lost that already, too.
All right, Rex, you ready to get this ball rolling?
Sure, why not?
All right, now, Babbler, are you able to stick around for a bit?
Yeah, I'll be here for a little bit.
Okay, then. Jeremy says we're kooks. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
All right.
Ain't wrong.
Exactly. Calls it like he sees it. All right. Up first, we have Mr. Jones Has Come of Age by T. Perry 898. My apologies. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Mr. Jones Has Come of Age by T. Perry 898. Hail the tousled, haired young troubadour, so petulant and smart. With a sharpened pencil, he would pin a rosette through my heart. Born of sweet dissatisfaction, wrapped in anger and despair, he would crucify his critic in a kiss-and-tell affair. Seems the loser, a sweet simpleton, was flattened in the crush. He was stripped of all his dignity and tarnished with a brush. Thought to understand what's happening and chose to speak too soon. Mr. Jones would buy himself a one-way ticket to the moon. In the carnival of oddities, he tried to lend a hand, slipped his eyes inside his pocket, stuck his head into the sand. A liaison with a midget left him stranded far from home. He was singing in the chorus, but was dancing all alone. Dressing up the big occasion, he would storm the barricade. Though he mingled with professors, he could never make the grade. In the interval, he chose to steal a smile from the geek. He was stuck without a paddle and completely up the creek. Give a shout for kind intentions, something as the revolution looms. Protesters are busy singing to evaporate the gloom. In the east, the sun is setting. There's a slow train on the track where a mystic's blowing kisses and screaming, don't go back. Mr. Dillon sends his blessings and contrive to tip his hat. Precious time has eased his conscience. Seems the thin man's growing fat. No hard feelings, all the demons are now locked up in the cage. Now the carnival is over. Mr. Jones Has Come of Age. End poem. All right, Pam, you get first dibs.
Great read there, Rex. Well, as always, T. Perry has wonderful rhyme and flow. I like that he could obviously from his AN, he really likes the song, my tribute to one of the greatest songs ever written, namely The Ballad of a Thin Man. Well, first of all, the title itself and the whole concept, the idea that the Mr. Jones in the song has come of age, has grown, has matured, and kind of looking back, I like that this is like a nod to Bob Dylan himself and to the song, and really to the idea that, you know, we all grow and change. Let's see here. I mean, this has great lines all the way through, but I really like sought to understand what's happened and chose to speak too soon. Mr. Jones would buy himself a one-way ticket to the moon. In the carnival of oddities, he tried to lend a hand, slipped his eyes inside his pockets, stuck his head into the sand. The whole idea of once you realize there's something wrong and trying to make that decision, do you confront it? Or do you stick your head in the sand? I also like protesters are busy singing to evaporate the gloom. In the east, the sun is setting. There's a slow train on the tracks where a mystic's blowing kisses and is screaming, don't look back. You know, that imagery, it fits so well with the song, and yet at the same time, it really fits well into our modern society. with the whole idea of the doomsday sayers and you know, the variety of people you see carrying around signs for various reasons. So just absolutely a really wonderful, thought-provoking write and very well done.
Well said, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Babla, how about you?
Well, I mean, Pam commented so beautifully, and she pulled so many of the lines that I was also very much attracted to. I really enjoy this. I think it's a fantastic tribute to both Bob Dylan and the song itself, as well as kind of a match, like the maturation of the 60s, you know, the changes in the way a generation looks at things and develops and grows as people. I think it's just wonderfully executed here. There's like this, there's a beautiful mix of like sadness, twistedness, nostalgia, and hope all warped together that I think is just very expertly done. I was also really drawn to that line where, oh gosh, let me find it now. Of course, he mentioned something, and then you can't ever find it. That's how it works. The Carnival of Oddities, he tried to lend a hand, slipped his eyes inside his pockets, and stuck his head into the sand. It gives, like, this really kind of almost Pan's Labyrinth kind of imagery to it with the eyeballs in the pockets. It's just a wonderfully, like, inane and kind of surreal in a really great way. While also making like the fantastic statement about, you know, pretending not to see things and just sticking your fingers in your ears and going la 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 because you're tired. I just really enjoyed this. I thought it was just absolutely fantastic. And I think it captured so many things about the original that made it so great. So I just thought this was absolutely excellent, right?
Well said, Babla. Thank you very much. He hits on that first stanza as the notion to Dylan himself, and then kind of almost works himself in as Dylan, as the Mr. Jones, the character in this piece. Although Dylan did say Mr. Jones is a real person, but that's not his name. So it was something of a nod to someone else that he knew, or maybe it was him that he's talking about in this piece, because it hits on the notion that the original song was about a guy who kept walking into strange, weird, and surreal situations. The more questions he asked, the less he understood the world around him, and that was kind of the lead-in crush to the whole song. But this walks the same thing. Adds in those little tidbits, the Carnival of Oddities. That was a nice touch. And then again, dressing up the big occasion still points to that carnival atmosphere. And this had me thinking of Three Dog Night, Mama Told Me Not to Come. And you walk into this house having a big old party, and you find all these strange situations that are going on inside. And the revolution in that is the strangeness that comes with it, and the fact that you don't get any real clear answers. And so there's a thought that coming down here is seems the thin man's growing fat, no hard feelings, all the demons are now locked up in a cage. Now the carnival is over, Mr. Jones has come of age. There's that notion of stepping outside of youth. As I grew to manhood, I gave up those things of youth. And that's kind of what this kind of walks into. Now the carnival is over. Mr. Jones has come of age. There's a notion of actually, as he's gone through all this mesmerizing strangeness, he has garnered something out of it, which has brought him to a place where of understanding for himself, at least, and in that notion, he has grown up a bit. All right, Pam, back to you.
I like that, Rex. Very well said there. And up next, we have It's How It All Begins by Mary Garg. And I'll go ahead and give this one a read, and it goes like this. There's a point at which everything goes awry, just when you think you've made cut. Just when you think you've got made, it's mostly how we get by, and how we try to make the grade is a suicide watch, trying to hard to hide the blade, but makes very little difference when you're always left alone. You blink and then you miss it. It's a situation of endless impossibilities, money for jam, flesh on the bone. You look all around yourself trying to make sense of it all. There are people wandering aimlessly and crashing into walls. The weatherman is predicting more rain and windy squalls. Too bad you missed the patterns. You gotta roll before you can call, and that's before you pick up the phone. You have your doubts and fears as more and more appear, and you're chilled to the bone. So you buy another ticket to take another shot at the ride. You're full of amyl nitrate, and it's churning you up inside. You've got angels dancing in your head to the point you think you died. That's worse than all the fake news that anyone saying you could abide. You want hurl more abuse like a stone. It's another shot in the penny arcade, another sweep of the razor blade. Time to pack it in, stripping flesh from the bone. You check your list of contacts to see who'll be the first to attack. With little or no imagination, you wonder who's putting on an act. It's harder those days to sort out all the fiction from the facts, so you log in using another identity as a means to change your face. You found an app that'll let you change your persona just in case. The person you really are coming out, that would be a total disgrace, making a mockery of who you were, like turning water into wine, or curing the leper inside your head, who was there all the time. No use in denying you really are alone, playing these games of hiding scars so no one can see who you really are, as you keep stripping more flesh off the bone. Now the preacher reaches out to lay his healing hands on another rube, a dollar down, and he'll heal all your ills, and you can throw away that feeding tube. Get out of that wheelchair to install every Rubik's Cube. Meet your maker the face-to-face, cure your chafing with a little lube, and that's the truth, and hold the phone. Here we go again, the ringmaster said to the circus crowd inside your head, as you go for broke, breaking all your bones. Another freak show is on reality TV, chasing their 15 minutes of fame before dispersing into obscurity. They'll get busted for possession again. Another suicide watch and such a farce. Another chance to shift the blame. As they write their final epitaph, it's all part of the game. Once more into the breach, hold the phone. It's a happening world on the edge, more and more of us leaping off the ledge before we cross over tearing flesh off the bone. Another roadshow full of doom and gloom. The news filled with the usual, we're all hell-bound. The exit tell us there is no more room as we grow more GMO corn to be ground. They keep passing more laws and keep passing the buck around. We're left holding the bag until there's nothing left to be found. Right down to the last man standing, all alone. We'll keep treading water till we finally drown. It's how we'll all fail as the curtain comes down. And we drift off into obscurity on a whimper and a groan. End poem.
Great read, Pan. You weren't expecting that one to be so long, were you?
That was quite a mouthful, yes.
Oh, I like that. That's funny. Dabla, why don't we start with you? What do you think about this?
This was a pretty dark comedic piece. It, you know, really looks at, like, everything going wrong and everything going negatively. You know, there's not many nods to the upside of life. You know, it's just, like, the anxiety of being and struggling and then eventually death, you know. But it's done in a way with the rhyme and the meter the way it is that it almost feels circus-like. Like, it almost – it feels comedic. which I think really kind of saves the tone here, you know, because a really, really long, dreary poem, you know, can be a real downer, but this doesn't read that way. So I think that's very well balanced in that way. I particularly enjoyed the second to last stanza, another road show full of doom and gloom, the news filled with the usual. We're all hellbound. The experts tell us there's no more room as we grow more GMO corn to be ground. They keep passing more laws and keep passing the buck around. You know, just the same old. It almost feels like a carousel, you know, and I think that second to last stanza takes it to a place that's a bit more blunt than some of the other stanzas. I mean, I wouldn't say any of them were subtle by any means, but I feel like that one is particularly driving points home, especially in the political and environmental realm. Which I think is a nice, you know, near tie of the piece as well. I think this has wonderful repetition in it, you know, repeating the concepts of, you know, the flesh on the bones and holding the phone. And I think it works really well, and I think it ties nicely into Dylan's style of the repetition with Mr. Jones, and is kind of rhyming and riffing off that in a really creative and interesting way. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was satisfyingly dark. Felt like a smirk.
Nicely drawn, Barbara. Thank you. And Pam, you got to read this lengthy piece. How about you?
Yeah, I know, like I said, we've got a great night of poetry tonight, and this one is no exception. I did like that second last stanza that, you know, that Babbler pointed out. This whole thing has a real strong social, political tone to it. But, you know, as you said, Babbler, when you say it was well balanced out, it really is, because there are parts that I found, like, particularly like funny, you know, like the whole, you know, the whole part where now the preacher reaches out to lay his healing hands on another room. You know, it's horribly sad that there are preachers that do that to people, that charge people for these fake healings. But at the same time, when you get to lines like "Get out of that wheelchair too and solve every Rubik's cube," I mean, it just that and picture you're chafing with a little lube. I mean, there's just some great, dark, twisted humor there. And then I really like, to me, this seems like kind of a turning point of someone, you know, because it says, you know, there's a point at which everything goes awry, just when you think you've got it made. This whole idea of somebody who's completely got their life together, and then everything starts falling apart, and they start seeing, like, left and right, the way people truly treat each other, how everything is about getting money. And then before you know it, he's like I really liked the lines also. So you buy another ticket to take another shot at the ride. You're full of amyl nitrate, and it's churning you up inside. First of all, wonderful rhyme and flow at that part. And you've got angels dancing in your head to the point you think you've got it. Again, some great dark humor. But, you know, the whole idea of someone almost giving up their humanity, somebody who says, you know what, I no longer care about the moral and social issues I used to care about. I want to be on the train that's making the money. I think it's just really a profound right, but it's profound and with using humor to kind of take out too many, like, so there's not too many sharp edges, but just enough that you feel the poke. So excellent write and very well done.
Well, nicely said, Pam. I think that chafing with the lube bit, that was kind of a double dip emotional thing right there. knocking off two birds with one stone, so to speak. I think based on the title, it's how it all begins and how it starts. There's a point at which everything goes awry. Just when you think you've got it made, it's almost how we get by and how we try to make the grade. It's suicide watch, trying hard to hide the blade, but makes very little difference when you're always left alone. there's a thought in that of, what's it, Murphy's Law. Anything can go wrong, and it'll always go wrong at the most inopportune moment. This seems to be that collage when everything hits at the same point in time, exposing that which you may not have understood or realized was there all along, and now you're seeing it in full view, or it's something you ignored, and now you're forced to face that which is going on. Because he hits on all that thought. Money for jam, flesh on the bone. We got here. People wanting aimlessly crashing into walls. The weatherman predicting more rain and windy squalls. So you buy another ticket, take another shot at the ride. You're full of amyl nitrate, and it's churning you up inside. The amyl nitrate, they call them poppers, I think. It's another shot in the penny arcade, another sweep of the razor blade. Time to pack it in, stripping flesh from the bone. I did like the turn of phrase with the flesh and the bone, because he changes that with each rendition, just a little hair, just to make it a little bit more appetizing or a little darker as he rolls on through. And then there's this one stanza. You check your list of contacts. You wonder who's putting on an act. It's harder these days to sort out all the fiction from the facts. So you log in using another identity as a means to change your face. You found a map that lets you change your persona just in case the person you really are comes out. That would be a total disgrace, making a mockery of who you were, like turning water into wine or curing a leper inside your head who was there all the time. There's a notation of how, well, you hit it on the morality has been stripped away with the ease of hiding online without actually divulging who the hell you are, and how easy it is to kill off somebody, strip them down to the bare bones, and then toss them in the garbage heap. I did like that thought with the preacher, the lube, the tube, and the Rubik's Cube. I thought that was pretty cool. And then again, another freak show is on reality TV. It's the whole world right now is nothing but reality TV, and it ain't working out too good. The roadshow of doom and gloom, that just seems to be something that's a nicely forced imperative to keep everybody fear bound. And I like the last line, as we drift off into obscurity on a whimper and a groan. So much for the big bang, going out with a bang. Yes, whimper and a groan seems to be the ease of thought as everything goes the way of the dodo eventually.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree with you about that end line. But you brought up some really great points, Rex. I'm glad you pointed out that part about the changing of the identity, how easy it becomes online, because I think that's a very relevant part. And, you know, the and then when you – now I'm blanking out. There was another part that you mentioned about the holy man or the preacher, and you know I thought that was a really good observation too. Let's go ahead and read Jeremy's comment. He says, "Oh, you know they are called poppers, Rex. No need to be coy."
Well, I wasn't sure if I was remembering correctly, but that does seem to be the most times you see it on TV, all they do is say poppers. And then you catch a glimpse someone down the line, amyl nitrate gets mentioned.
Yeah. great comments. Oh,
it's one of the few things I've never actually tried. So, haha.
That is surprising. That is surprising. I thought we were going to get to hear some fascinating Rex Popper story.
Wrong. No, I haven't done poppers, I haven't done heroin or crack or stuff like that. Just the good stuff out of the
Well, that's good because you know my ex did crack and that guy was an idiot. So you don't want to be an idiot.
Oh man.
Or meth. I can't.
Oh
too
my
much
god!
In that.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Not good stuff. Not good stuff.
Exactly. But, all right, Babbler, I have your poem up. Go ahead, give it a read for us.
All right. This is Drawing Blanks. The room was stark white, in conflict with the colored cabbage folds of my mind. A pencil tucked itself between my fingers and demanded that I draw. I asked what, but walls just stared at me, daring me to pluck images from the sky. First came demons and monsters, grotesque and twisted, screaming for release, an infinity or two trapped in tiny spaces between my ears. They came with horns and teeth, goat-like eyes with rectangular pupils gazing into nowhere, having seen all that makes up my insides. I asked them what to expect, but their long, twisted tongues couldn't form coherent sound. Next came childlike works of lollipop trees and sunshine rimmed in triangles. Little dogs on leashes held by hands with some 30-odd fingers pointing in all directions. The sun was always yellow, clouds vibrant blue, apples ripened to perky perfection. Inanimate objects bore smiles. There were no depictions of you. I felt a little emptier now, room to breathe upstairs. Innocence morphed to pubescence, sketching out haired scrotums and supple breasts, lady parts fully furred like birds' nests, tasteless nudes in revealing poses, buttocks separated in full exposure from the dimpled lower back of a beautiful man folding seamlessly between heavy thighs of a breathless woman, intimacy left out of the act. Yeah. Public display of what happens between closed doors. Mountains rose from the bosoms in high, snow-capped peaks. Forests and lakesides, ocean-sprayed sands and stones littered with broken shells and empty bottles. Deep viridescence of evergreen carpets on hillsides under tequila sunrises, topped with a maraschino sherry sun, riffled along the walls, touching on all the places I've been or dreamt or imagined dreaming. Last came faces, jawlines and earlobes, memorized freckles in out-of-the-way places, errant hairs along brow ridges and rounded nostrils, lips full of promises, russet irises encircling black centers under leaden lashes, looking into the lightning, white wall behind my corneas. Something is happening here, but I don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? End poem.
Gregory Bablis, thank you very much. All right, Pam.
Well, holy
You're not allowed
shit,
to
this
draw
is like
blanks
a...
here.
What's that?
You're not allowed to draw blanks on this one.
Oh, my goodness. No, I couldn't. I couldn't draw blanks. This one, it's like a key exchange party in hell. It's a dark write, but what I particularly like about this is, you know, with the original song, there's some obvious references to sexual acts. So you don't get the idea that these are just people who, you know, are immoral and maybe in business practices, and not even immoral, but you would say they are definitely indulgent. And like the lines about the midget in heels kneeling before him and then says, "Here's your throat back." You know, obviously very metaphorical, but also very sexual. And you've delved into that arena of the inspiration. The whole, like, this just seems like what is image after image of a totally fucked up dream. I mean, you know, like, first, you know, you're sitting there, And it's almost like you stare into the wall and start going into a bad acid trip, and here comes the demon, and here comes the monsters. And next comes childlike works of lollipop trees and sunshine rimmed in triangles, little dolls and leashes held hand by hands with some 30-odd fingers. That actually reminds me of when I was younger, I could not watch The Wizard of Oz. I would always have nightmares. It was like, I could watch Friday the 13th and Freddy, Nightmare on Elm Street, no problem. But that section right there very much has a whole kind of a feel of being caught in in the Wizard of Oz land, but it's almost like you're not following the yellow brick road. You're following the red brick road. And let's see, what else here? Innocence, morph, and pubescence, sketching out, hair growing, and supple breasts, lady parts fully furred like bird's nest, tasteless nude, and revealing poses. You know, and then I'm going to kind of switch thoughts here. With that kind of, it begins to feel like someone's exploration of their own sexuality, of their own discovering and fascination of the human body. There's kind of this sense of creation within the mind and from the pen, the pencil, and looking into the lightning white walls behind my corneas. This has a very dreamscape feel to it, and what that part reminded me, it very much has a Clockwork Orange feel to it. And I guess to me, like, the general idea I get of this is that it's all those sexual and violent images that we hold behind our corneas, and we think nobody else has these thoughts. You know, no, I have to keep them hidden. I have to keep them behind. But you certainly don't keep them hidden, do you, babbler?
I'm not very good at
But I think this is a wonderful write. Very strong and very well done.
Thank you.
Nicely said, Pam. I'm going to walk off the edge and go in somewhere different. All right, that opening stanza, I like how you ran it. The room was stark white and caught of my mind. A pencil tucked itself between my fingers and demanded that I draw. And then you asked, what? But walls just stared at me, daring me to pluck images from the sky. Now, that kind of has me thinking on a therapy level. Your stark white room kind of offers up maybe a sanitarium, pencil and paper, and you're not speaking, so to speak. But you're given the chance to draw out that which is on the forefront of the mind. And that's what I get with the opening stanza. The next one, demons, monsters, the stuff that lies in the back of the mind, the things that we fear, and the description are after the horns of teeth, goat-like eyes, the long twisted tongues couldn't form coherent sound. There's that notion, again, right there, of not speaking. Now, I did like this one because this was really quite telling. The childlike works, little dogs on leashes, some 30-odd fingers, apples ripe in the perfection, inanimate objects, four smiles. There were no depictions of you, meaning self, so to speak. That emptier thought now, room to breathe upstairs, you know, it's kind of an easy thought in the moment. I can take a breath now because you walked yourself out of the darkness in the second stanza into a little more easier realm, and you're taking a breath at that point. And then you walk into the next one, which is a little lurid, but it's got a little touch of humor into it as well. Sketching out haired scrotums and supple breasts, lady parts fully furred like birds' nests, tasteless nudes and revealing poses, buttocks separate in full exposure. Now you're growing into that angle of where more is coming out in the exposure of your pictures. Now, I did love this one. The next stanza down, you offer up this thought off the body of surrealism, the almost Dali-esque mountains rose from the bosoms and high snow-capped peaks, forests and lakesides, ocean spray sands and stones, littered with broken shells and empty bottles. And I like the sort of deep viridescence of evergreen carpets on hillsides, the tequila sunrises, and the maraschino cherry sun was really exquisite thought. And I could see that as a painting itself, along with the naked body underneath, exposed as the thought to where everything grows. That was pretty cool. Now, the bad again of this would be the jawlines and earlobes. There's that notion of you drawing them last because they're the last things you take notice of everything else. And the thought running down the back end. Do you? I don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? I had that thought of where it started out. My thought of therapy. Mr. Jones is the therapist, and that's the artful question at the end. Do you know what's going on here, Mr. Jones? Can you explain all these images to me and what comes with it?
Thank you. Loved hearing your thoughts. I don't know if you guys want to hear the background of it or not.
Sure, why not?
I've never wanted to call anyone's interpretation wrong. I love everybody's interpretations. This was I was thinking about, you know, I've been in a mania lately. I'm pretty open about the fact that, you know, I have bipolar. My mania is coming to an end, which is unfortunate, but that's how it goes. That's the cyclical nature of things. I've got to pay those dues now, I guess, pretty here soon. But and when I start drawing, you know, and I never know what I'm going to do, and it all just kind of falls out. You know, and my brain just goes from one place to another 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 place. And it just, it happens and it happens and it happens so fast. And my mind is just completely filled to the brim with all of these thoughts that are just kind of yarned together to the point where sometimes it's just too full. And I use writing and I use drawing as a way to kind of clear out that headspace, to get it out of my brain.
I like that.
So that I can think for a minute, to really kind of sort stuff out. So that's kind of what it is. It was just kind of a free write, and I just kind of let the thoughts go from one place to the next just as they happened. So that's just the order that they kind of fell out in, just inspired by the Bob Dylan song about, you know, all the strange things that happen and not really understanding the whys, but not so much analyzing the whys, but just letting the weird things be. So, I don't know, I enjoyed it, and thanks for the inspiration. I thought this was a fun piece for me to write.
Well, I like the explanation. It hits me on I like that breath offering explains quite a bit. There's a little release in the emptying, so to speak, and then you continue. But I did like you've used it as a note to therapy for yourself. You purge your system by writing and drawing. I like that thought.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate what a straightforward and honest person you are, Babbler, about your bipolar, because I think, as I always say, you just never know who you're going to have a positive impact on when they get to hear, you know, you talk about your poetry, talk about your life. And when I say you, I don't mean just you, but any one of us that can write or say something that somebody might relate to. And, yeah, and I liked having the explanation, too. There is still parts, though, that very much remind me, like, another Pam thing that Pam did when she was a kid is she drew a picture of a naked woman inside her grandmother's Bible because she figured that it was the one book Grandma never opened.
Until one day she did.
Until one day she did.
Who desecrated my Bible? How dare you?
Kind of random side note on that same vein. My family always had the tendency. When people string words together, I have a tendency to make them into my own new phrases. When people say butt still, I like to respond with, that's where you get your butt liquor. And I've been saying that since I was a kid. Like, and I didn't hear that from anybody. It's just something my weird brain came up with. But it makes me think of, when people say, butt Jesus, and I go ahead and just put an additional T on there so that it's butt Jesus. And I drew this cartoon character that is a butt Jesus. Like, he has a butt for a face. And I went around and I drew I drew this butt Jesus in the back of, like, every notebook I could find in our house as a kid that had a blank page. And so for years, my family was just finding random doodles of butt Jesus. They're probably still come around.
Dang, you can start your own religion.
Well, that is so much for Lucky Charms. He's using the
right.
Buddy to face in here.
So.
All right, Pam, where are we going now?
All right. Up next, we have Forever Bound by Guilty and Rex. Go ahead, give that a read for us, please.
Aha, one of these almost right. I like this, it's fun. Forever Bound by Guilty. There is a long way home for the wandering soul looking for himself. It is only alone. Bound to the family trust, it is your inheritance, son. You must live up to the ideas of high society and stiletto heels. You can break but never bend, hang out with new friends, sword swallowers or never dwells, another dwells. College is college, you must admit, and nothing but trust fund checks. No halls, crystal balls, dead girl, live boy, Ithaca Hall. Smoke dope with blacks, pop up with yellows. Watch out for the reds, they will smear you, those fellows. Dust roads, come up alone, wash up clean in between. A fair exchange, you had a few, left a check when payment due. When it bounces, go on the lam, they'll write a letter to your old man. Getty Hearst, Rockefeller, Gore, a gay affair is such a bore. Deny, deny, boy, is it a lie. Simple, useful indiscretions, Mr. Jones, we have skeletons in our bones. It is the blood you drink and meat you eat. Carry the rest, and the living won't speak. And boom. Another bit of deadpan dark humor. All right, Babbler, what do you think about this one?
I really liked this one. I thought it had just wonderful flow to it, you know, and I get the impression that it's a story, like, about this kind of, trust fund, you know, guy that's... going to school and taking part in all kinds of, you know, nonsense and oh gosh, I can't think of the right words, but getting up to all kinds of no good things, on daddy's dime and then, you know, having it covered over, you know, due to reputation, but it's got like this mischievous flair to it. Like it's, you know, it's rebellious in a kind of fun way. And I really enjoy the feel of it. I also really particularly liked the line, we have skeletons in our bones. You know, because obviously your bones are a skeleton, but it's like skeleton in the closet, but I feel like it's even deeper than that. You know, like these acts of living it up and just, you know, getting into wild things in youth, you know, become ingrained in you, become part of who you are because it's like that naughty little secret of your history. So I really enjoyed that. It is dark, you know, there's the darkness to it because, of course, this is like, you know, the unethical things that the upper echelon gets away with that other people don't, you know, or can't. So I really enjoyed this. To me, it really smacks of a certain time and place and experience that reserved for a few, but glamorized in the media so that it feels like they were experienced by everyone. So I really enjoyed this piece. I think it captures a feeling, that particular like fun-loving, nostalgic feeling in a really great way, you know, despite being... you know, kind of dark and black humored. But I feel like that tone is very appropriate. So I enjoyed this write immensely.
Nicely said, Babla. Thank you. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I really liked it. I do not like this type of print. I do not like it, Sam. I am. What is it called?
I do. It gives the impression of actually having read it as opposed to punching buttons.
I will never read this kind of font unless I absolutely have no one else to pass the poem off to. So I would have to do an entire show by myself in order to read this font. But that aside, I really like, again, it does have some great dark humor, but this really takes a look, to me, it takes a look at how the rich kids, the rich college kids, you know, with the family trust fund, you know, get away with so much more. Like, even though there's humor used, I really feel like there's this whole serious undertone. It is your inheritance, son. You must live up to the ideas of high society and stiletto heels. You can break but never bend, hang out with new friends, sword swallow and never do well, gossips and other swells. You must admit to nothing but trust fund checks. Now, the whole idea of go ahead and do whatever you want. You're the rich boy. Mommy and daddy will cover your tracks. That's my general idea I get from it. When it bounces Gorn the Lamb, they'll write a letter to your old man, Getty Hearst, Rockefeller, Gore, gay affairs, such a bore, deny, boys, it's a lie, simple, youthful indiscretions. You know, the whole idea of boys will be boys, within those lines, a kind of the defense there. I find it a particularly intriguing and thought-provoking write, and very well done.
Well said, Pam. You hit on the college boys and I was thinking trust fund babies and the shit they get themselves into. It isn't just the parents who cover up. It hits on the thought that here in here of the college actually covering up too, and friends and those you get into who cover up. Dead girl, live ball, Ithaca Falls. Well, that hits on Ted Kennedy. And this next one, smoke dough with blacks, pop up with yellows, watch out for the reds. They will smear you, those fellows. I like that that four-line stanza. It smacks of not just indulgence, but a little bit of hypocrisy as well, because it all paints the fact that left the check when payment due, when advances go on the lamb, they'll write a letter to your man. You got Getty, Hearst, Rockefeller, Gore. A gay affair is such a bore. I thought putting out those names was a nice talent because you look at those names and no matter what they get into, it never sticks. And the thought with deny, boy, that had me thinking of Billy Joe, Jim Bob, Jefferson Davis. I puffed in college, but I never inhaled. And hey, I never had sex with that woman. Yeah. And I like the thought to bury the rest and the living won't speak. And there is that nice thought within that social atmosphere. They keep all the indiscretions and the skeletons in their bones under their own hats. That way they can blackmail each other to hell. Because they need a favor or two.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned the hypocrisy within it. And to me, I just want to bring up the one more line. I apologize, but I forgot to mention that the absolute darkest line is where it says, dead girl, live boy, Ithaca Falls. Because if you think of the idea of how easy it would be to get rid of a body by just dumping it over some falls and letting the water carry it away.
Reflection on the car accident and Mary Jo Kopechne. He managed getting out, but she drowned in the car.
Oh, my goodness. That's scary. Sorry. I was really closing my door.
And it was like it was 3 or 4 hours before the police were called. So, yeah, that was a big stink back then, but he got away with it.
Yeah, that's scary and sad. But that makes sense. You know, whenever somebody mentions a specific part, an area of the country or know, in a poem, I always think there must have been a reason that the author of the poem gravitated towards putting that in there. So, glad you knew that tidbit of information there, Rex.
Yeah. That's funny, Babbler. I just saw that. I'm a weirdo.
Oh. True story.
I would say the first step to recovery is admitting it, but Rex has been saying he's a weirdo for years, and he still hasn't recovered. I doubt.
I don't consider it a problem.
Absolutely not.
No, I'm fine with being a weirdo.
Oh, absolutely.
Makes life more interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so much more enjoyable. All right, Sam.
Oh. What's that?
Nothing. I was just chuckling at the next title. Okay.
Oh, yes, Ballad of the Muted.
Yeah, this sounds like it'd be another one of these fun pieces with a little bit of sarcastic musing rolling through.
I just imagine like a CD that had a track on it that was just nothing but like 5 minutes of silence.
Oh my goodness.
White noise without the sound.
That would be funny. That would be. My daughter says living with me is like living with a musical where somebody will just randomly break out in song. But she says the problem is you don't break out in the normal songs. You're always breaking out into some like heavy metal screeching type thing. So she says it's like living within a musical that scares the hell out of her.
A heavy metal opera. I'm for it.
Exactly. There you go. Heavy metal opera. That's it. And all right. Up next we have Ballad of the Muted by Kay Heartless. And it goes like this. Up the steep stairs painted white by former slaves, you twist the handle as if breaking off grapes. You ask, what day is it? But their faces are graves, whiteness a tombstone and mist, forgotten prayers, because something is buried here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Smith? You look for a chair to rest your wounded knee, the overgrown trail full of feathers and teepees. You ask, are you a native to a warrior with smallpox disease, your whiteness a roaring rapid by a river of blood-red hair? Because something is buried here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Smith? Crazy carny music calls you towards a booth, the African Dodgers baseball laid out on display, 3 for 5 cents, a dark face without a tooth. The coon is finally out of its cage, a hit, cheering makes you sick. Because something is buried here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Smith? Backyard tied fence, papers stamped by patrols, prying children from their folks, guns and spotlights and faces, documents, investigations, bodies doing barrel rolls, foil blankets placed in plastic cages, throats and hearts pushed up again. Because something is buried here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Smith? The green glow of night, a jap, look at his eyes, roll call behind barbed wire, you can't feel sorry for yourself. Dusty pipes produce no water, shikata ganai, it can't be helped. Swallow stolen lies with pride, keep yourself from fright, because something is buried here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Smith? End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Babs, what you think?
Well, this is, I mean, it's clearly about racism, you know, and the title there is very apt. You know, this is a song for people who can't speak for themselves or on the behalf of people, you know, who have been muted, who've been told to shut up. And it carries you through so many different applications of racism, you know, starting with, you know, stairs that were painted by slaves, and then were taken through, you know, Native Americans and Wounded Knee and Trail of Tears, you know, and just asking, are you Native, you know, to a beaten down people, you know, they've been like smothered, you know, your whiteness, a roaring rapid by a river of blood red hair. And then we're taken to, you know, a carnival and black baseball players who got paid, you know, diddly squat, you know, to basically perform for a mostly white audience, you know, and what that was like. And then, you know, then take into the modern, more modern era where we have, you know, these internment camps based, you know, at the border that we're calling, you know, like keeping people out of, you know, illegal immigration from happening. But the cruel and harsh treatment is like completely unnecessary, you know, so it kind of twists all of these different timelines together to kind of highlight the fact that we're not talking about something necessarily in the past. We're talking about something current and in the past. It's an ongoing thing, you know, and then going to, you know, the Japanese internment camps that happened here in World War II that get so often glossed over. You know, they talk so much about Auschwitz and the concentration camps in Germany, but you don't really hear much about the Japanese internment camps that happened on U.S. soil until you're out of the educational system. You know, that's one of those things that you learn on your own. You learn by educating yourself, as is true for most of these items that are covered in here. And then, of course, the repetition of that, the three-line stanza, because something is buried here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Smith? Like, are you seeing this? It, you know, it's just really driving home, like, do you see this? Like, do you understand? Like, do you have any concept of, like, what, you know, what is going on and what has been lost and what has been killed? And I think it's really poignant, and I think it's really well done, and I think it maintains that musicality of the Thin Man, Ballad of a Thin Man by Bob Dylan. I think it works itself really well to that in tone and kind of structure, but I think it paints a dark but poignant picture. I think I would love to hear this to music. I think it would work just so well. I think it's wonderfully written.
Well said, Babla. All right, Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yeah, absolutely. This would be great to hear to music. This is a very sombering piece, and repetitiveness can be a really strong poetic tool, and she uses that device really well here. As Babla said, that repeating line, but you don't know what, because something is buried here, but you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Smith? And I don't know if she just chose Mr. Smith just because it's an easy name, but it makes me think of the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. I feel like there's this whole idea of someone who's innocent, you know, I shouldn't say that they're innocent, but perhaps they were naive, or perhaps they just kind of ignored what was there, and all of a sudden their eyes are being opened. And I think Babla made a really good point about how there are so many parts of history we don't learn about until after we're out of the school system. I know for me personally, I've probably learned, like in this last few months, I've been watching a lot of history shows on YouTube, and Weird History is one of them, and there's just all kinds of them where it's like, you're like, wow, they really keep the good stuff out of school. You know, there's always that kind of like just brushing things off. And for me, I do like how she manages to, you know, like this isn't a particularly long poem, but she covers a lot of area of history you know, from the Trail of Tears you know, modern days and the World War II, and, you know, so a lot of coverage here. And, you know, I hate to use the word wordplay, but I can't think of another word, but it was very clever the way she said wounded knee there. You look for a chair to rest your wounded knee, the Overgrown Trail, Bold Feathers, NTPs, like that she fit wounded knee in there, but made it almost as a way for to, instead of focusing on the real wounded knee, the real problem in history, this person is focused inward, like on themselves. I feel like that's a really strong line in the way it creatively used the wording and also used it as a whole metaphor for how ignorant and selfish people oftentimes can be or willing to ignore you know, certain parts of history. And so just a powerful write and very well done.
Nicely done, you two. I've got nothing left I can add. You just took the last thing I was going to offer up. But I do got one thing that you didn't, nobody said on. Ha! That last stanza, the green glow of night, a Jap look in his eyes, roll call behind barbed wire. You can't feel sorry for yourself. You know what the funny thing is about, well, not the funny thing is, the strangeness of that all is with that one stanza. They actually opened up that Japanese internment camp in California from the 40s to place all the illegals coming across the border. So it's once again open 70 years later.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting fact there. I wonder what
that was the only thing you guys
is,
left me because you hit everything else.
And this also
well,
was a real slap
come
in the face
something.
Bold choice.
The what?
Oh, I was just saying, you know, it's really a slap in the face bold choice to do that. I mean, considering this, you know, what statement does that make? I mean, can you imagine if they decided to, like, reopen you know, a concentration camp? Like, that's just crazy to me. Like, sorry, just
no, it is. There's a rude harshness
statement.
In that. And the fact that you can actually visit Auschwitz, because it sits as a memorial to that thought, never let this bloody thing happen again.
Yeah.
Because once those last survivors are gone, and there's very few left, the only thing that we have left is that that image that you can actually visit and see the at least part and parcel of the atrocities that were committed and understand that could never, ever happen once again.
Whereas here, I guess we reopen them in times of convenience, which just seems really sick.
You're right, because and the weird thing about it, I think it was once a fairground, too. So they've shut the fairground down and turned it into an internment camp, and now they've opened it up once more. But not as a fairground, but as another camp.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. So I was looking, and you two might have already known this, but I was curious about what exactly Shikai Gainai means, which I'm pronouncing wrong. Let's see.
Shikati Gainai. It's
it means
the phrase. She got the translation right next to it.
Oh, does it?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I did not realize that. Okay. How did I not realize that? And I was reading it. Oh, okay. It just blended together so nicely. I didn't realize that. Huh. Interesting. Well, that tells you how my mind's floating off into different areas too quickly. But yes, that did pull together.
It's twisted.
What's that?
See, now it's Tuesday. It's twisted.
That's right. That's right. All right. And what are we doing next? Oh, yes. Up next, we have Get My Drift, Don't Ya? By Eric Svensson, who unfortunately did not provide us with a SoundCloud this time. Nobody gave us SoundClouds. But, Babbler, would you read that for us, please?
Sure. I didn't provide a SoundCloud because I had planned to call.
Well, that's true. And then thank you for that.
Well, I don't know what time it is down there in South Africa, but I know there's a lot of shit going on.
All right. This is Get My Drift, Don't Ya? By Eric Svensson. Fine bedfellows, Mr. Jones and I. Paisley bow tie thin, not too ostentatious. Parker pen in hand, bonded paper notepad. Pencil, Dumbo, get into character, right you are. Have this uncontrollable urge to walk on the music side of things. Patent leather shoes, want to walk all the way to Minnesota. Decent, upright folk live out there. Minnesota farming folk hosted my brother for a year. Bright lad won a study bursary in the USA back in 69. A sleek black panther strides through a forest, stops, sniffs the air, continues. Owls blink down on the lithe, hungry black specter. Constant movement, determined, searching for something unseen. Jade eyes glow canticles. Bedfellows, Mr. Jones and I. Doppelgangers. We line dance, check out the scene, skim through song reviews. Dylan was a believing boy. Can't quite figure the JC comparison made. Seems critics really went to town on the poet-singer. Something is happening, but you don't know what it is. Rewind the song and play it again. Want to get walking like Forrest Gump right now. Handsome lad, this fine Minnesota boy was, heart of a true poet. Right you are. How many roads does a man have to travel down? Damn wind always blowing them answers away. Surrealistic snippets form a cubistic portrait. Sense a lonely blue dragonfly hover above a pond. Aerial copulation of its kin, but he's alone. Quite happy to ponder life from a distance. Pond-dwelling geeks and freaks below are such a drag. Oh my God, am I here all alone? Is there anybody out there? Mr. Jones and I parted ways, too intrigued by these lyrics to bother about hanky-panky. He raised up his head and asked, is this where we are? Pointed to Dylan's poster and said, it's his. What's mine is mine. End poem.
Great read, Babla. Thank you very much. All right, Pam. You get Eric's drift?
Oh, yeah. Well, I really, yeah, I like this write. It's got a nice nostalgic feel to it. I like that it pays a tribute to Bob Dylan, but it's also got kind of, I like how he shares some of his real life with us, like decent upright folks live out there. And I will tell you that not everybody from Minnesota is a decent upright folk. So we'll just, but then again, neither is everybody from Wisconsin. But, you know, Minnesota farming folk host my brother for a year, bright lad, want to study. Now, nice dash of real life there. Strange bedfellows, Mr. Jones and I, doppelgangers, we line dance, check out the scene, skim through song reviews. Dylan was a believing boy, can't quite figure the JC comparison made. Seems critics really went to town on the poet singer. It's interesting. You know, I don't know the exact what happened with Dylan, but I do know that there tends to be a lot of idol worship, or that the critics can make you or break you, and whether the whole idea that the comparison of a famous figure to Jesus Christ is not unheard of. It's I'm sure it's happened multiple times. It's almost as like a free flow of thought, but it's a more concentrated free flow of thought. Like it's how he relates his life and his thoughts to Dylan. And I like how it openly shares with it. A handsome lad, this fine Minnesota boy, was heart of a true poet. I think heart of a true poet is a perfect description of Dylan's lyrics. And I do like the humor and too intrigued by these lyrics to bother about Hanky Panky. He raises up his head and asks, is this where we are? The whole idea of two people walking side by side, exploring somewhere, perhaps a city where there's all kinds of appetizers on display, and being so captivated by the lines of a song. There's something really just intriguing and humorous about that, and I really appreciate this writing. It's very well done.
Nicely said there, Pam. Thank you very much. And Babla, how about you?
I really enjoyed this piece. I guess for me, it feels like a story about two guys, possibly, exploring homosexuality. It's hard to say, but I kind of get a little bit of that vibe from it. And getting lost in the moment of the 60s, like getting lost in the movement and the music and in a time and a place, specifically Minnesota, in 1969, where, you have a Black Panther, obviously, the movement, cruising through the woods and listening to this music. And then looking up one day and realizing the moment had passed, I love the line there, is anybody out there, makes me think Pink Floyd instantly, which we're now out of the 60s, we're now into the 70s, and it's like, holy crap, where'd the time go? That's how it felt like to me, it's like living life, having a season of life in a mood, like a decade that just kind of floats by, and once it's gone and you see it in the rear view, you're like, well, that's over. So I don't know, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very immersive and like emotionally coherent. So I thought it was a great piece. I really enjoyed it.
Well said, Babla. Thank you. This is a lot more straightforward than a lot of Eric's pieces. This comes across as a real ease of thought to play with, and that angle with the JC, I never heard that one about Dylan, but I did hear it about Clapton. There was a big old paint on a wall back in London back in the day, in 67. Clapton is God. So, yes, it does happen, as you pointed out, Pam. I did like the sort of fine bedfellows, Mr. Jones and I. Paisley, bow tie, thin knot, too ostentatious. Parker, pen in hand, bonded paper, notepad, pencil, Dumbo. Get into character, right you are. I like the attention to detail. Parker, pen, bonded paper, notepad. Wow. And also drops in patent leather shoes into the second line. Want to walk all the way to Minnesota. And then bright lad won a study bursary in the USA back in 69. A study bursary. You don't hear bursary anymore. That hits on the notion of actually getting a free entrance to a college. Nice to put. I did like that stance of the sleek Black Panther. That does offer up a different viewpoint and imagery that walks within that. And again, right back to Strange Bedfellows, Mr. Jones and I, doppelgangers. We line dance, check out the scene, skim through song reviews. Dylan was a believing boy. And what else we got here? I got a kick out of that. Want to get walking like Forrest Gump right now. That was a funny line. And I did like the thought of surrealistic snippets from a cubistic portrait. blue dragonfly hover above a pond. I thought that was really nice too. And as one of the back end of this, pointed to Dylan's going, is this where we are? Pointed to Dylan's poster and said, it's his. What's mine is mine. There's that offering of, was in the song, there was something about that too. I forgot at the moment. It was a question of, what asking what's mine. And well, what's mine is mine. That's the end of that. Boy, that made absolutely nobody sense. All right, Pam.
All right. I'm sorry. I got distracted with reading. I apologize. Reading. I was Googling the Bob Dylan Jesus Christ comparison to see if there was any stories, and there is stories, but all of them are about how he came to find Christ. And one particularly interesting one I came across was he was interviewed in Rolling Stone magazine, and during the interview, one of his statements he said was, I still believe in Jesus, motherfuckers.
Okay. I think he had the heavy criticism came on him right around 9. Because up until then, he was basically folk singer. He was playing a normal guitar, but after he had an accident which kept him out of going to Woodstock, but afterwards when he got healed up, he picked up the electric guitar, and everybody kind of thought that as betrayal to his folk background.
Yes, but
play his All Along the Watchtower kind of had an opening effect on him, and he took up the electric guitar as well.
Very cool. But, yeah, the article I was in did mention that, so I'm glad you knew that, Rex. And I apologize. I should have been listening better to you just because, well, first of all, I always learn something from your comments. Second of all,
that I was going to get through.
Yeah. So there's some interesting stuff to know. And up next we have Star by Thomas B. And Rex, will you go ahead and give that a read for us?
As soon as it materializes.
Poof.
Ah, there it is. Star by Thomas B. The good ones think it's because they are right. They feel the bullets don't matter. They aren't going to die because it wasn't written for the part they play. To do as they wish because someone else always pays. The good die young, it's no fun. Someone has to be chosen, don't they? You just happen to be the star in this play. Everything happens for a reason, so you say. Others declare it is written in the stars. I believe it is in back rooms and too many cigars. Fat men who think they can rule the day make lots of money off those that pray. The good die young, it's no fun. Someone has to be chosen, don't they? You just happen to be the star in this play. Clear the smoke, forgive every sin, we all can win. What's that? I can't hear you over the din. You have a new product that makes fat thin. It will be a winner, because people will pay for anything that makes them better today. The good die young, it's no fun. Someone has to be chosen, don't they? You just happen to be the star in this play. Baby, 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 I can make you a star. Hitch your wagon to my car, we will go far. You know it's about getting rich for me and you. Yes, you too, dear. Have no fear, all the riches are here. We will make it. Make it, then live another day. The good die young, it's no fun. Someone has to be chosen, don't they? You just have to be the star in this play. When you grow too old, we will find another. It is not about bloodlines or your sister or mother. We live for the money, and it's pay as you go. You dig for the dollar, we will call you when we know. It's been nice knowing you. Have a nice day. And boom. All right, Pam. You're up.
All right. Well, first of all, great read. I like how he had so many different song references. Now, if I remember right, and I'd have to Google for sure, but I believe that Baby Baby, I Can Make You a Star, You're Wagging to My Car, We Will Go Far, is actually lines from Jacob Dylan's song from the group The Wildflowers. I could be wrong, so don't hold me to that, but it seems like it is. And then I know there was other song references here. Clear the Smoke, Forgive Every Sin, We Can All Wait. I don't know why, but that just, either that or that just seems like lines that should be in a song. The Good Die Young, that's Only the Good Die Young, another great song reference. You know, this has some really nice rhyme and flow to it. The good ones think it's because they are right. They feel the bullets don't matter. They ain't going to die because it wasn't written for the part they play. That makes me think of those who send other people off to do the dirty work, to go to war, to do the actual physical acts of war while they're comfortable and at home. This is another one that would be really great to hear to music. Everything happens for a reason, so you say. Others declared is written in the stars. I believe it's in back rooms, too many cigars, fat men who think they can rule the day. Again, we have greed, hypocrisy. We have a really strong look at the way, unfortunate way humans treat each other. And that, you know, people who say everything happens for a reason are usually those people who have never had their lives brutalized by any sort of war or poverty. You know, since they're not the ones getting punished, it must be happening for a reason, and the reason must be your fault. I like how the display of finger pointing and judgmental tone of this, and hypocritical. It's almost a hypocritical tone of those who do get to stay home and be comfortable. But anyway, it's really just excellent. I want to hear this to music, and I also very interested in your thoughts, Rex.
Thank you very much, guys. And Babla, how about you?
Babla was getting tired and falling asleep, so
okay. She
had to go.
I think this is the Biden advertising overall. The sort of a clear the smoke, forget every sin, we all can win. What's that? I cannot hear you over the din. Boy, that sounds like a church thought there. You have a new product that makes fat thin. It will be a winner because people will pay for anything that makes them better today. Now, there's another advertising thought, but the rest of it kind of hits on those notations of the backroom dealings from record executives in the 60s, 70s, 80s, into the 90s, because they got away with murder. They pay off the record jockeys for the radio stations. And they always took a bigger cut, and they owned the music. And that's the way it went. And like it says at the bottom, hey, when you get too old, we'll find another. There's always someone else to prop up, a new face to come along, a new voice to be counted. And have a nice day. Yeah, really.
Always have so much that you, little tidbits of interesting things that you know about history. And can connect to rights. I think that's really cool. But, it does have that feel, like you said, of, you know, throwing out the person that no longer, you know, fits your needs and looking for the next one.
That's what Hart's Barracuda was all about. The executives from the record company.
Oh, wow. Huh. And here I thought it was another man-hating song. I'm just kidding.
Huh?
I said, and here I thought it was another man-hating song. And then I said I was just kidding. But Yeah. Huh. Well, that's cool to know. Are you okay? Or are you just going to break out into disco? Or... Oh, okay. For some reason,
disco.
I thought you said, ow.
Disco died a long time ago. Thank God for that stuff.
I thought you were trying to bring it back.
Oh, God, no. Disco stuff.
It's hanging from your ceiling. It hung itself. But, yeah, very, very impressive right there by Thomas B. And all right. Up next is Finito by Jim Bellamy. And, sorry, it goes like this. Oh, when once a sea of stains slides, then cold gray cunts will rain down where Idas sucks salt rape and coil cut sails writhe a sweet grave. Oh, when once crashed kids cry for grain, then glass hands will rid eyes of brains. When once a sea of pigs swills prayer, then soiled winds will frig sex on stairs and idle mind map ripped farmyard veils and farms end as lips listen to red nails. Oh, this is the smile quit. This is the vile swift lashes and tits cut out and buttering slut sea sand drowned. The end. Yes, I hear a sea of tears grinding. Yeah, I see a tree of fears framing lost birds. And oh, when once ears grow old and cold songs will sear death's soul, burn drums. Oh, where horde guns leer and gods come will feed dolls to city lights and neon bands. Must light blorted, blared midnights and digging deadness delves death for kindness. Oh, wavering wool men dress woven breasts, lathering gold men press, sleeping death and holy sin suffers swift, roped satinized killer bells. Ghosts glow like plumes, hostesses heal guns, and wives will drag dumb lips and feet until true death ends. When once the radio dark has burned songs and coated killer guns will gas eagles and scalded children. Oh, when once a loud altar has burnished heavy lungs and grass cells smoke to fury, men and masked folks move, slashed, weighed, starved, and swoop, drag death for bodies. Oh, I hear a dropping sparrow, I see a sea of shadow, shaking wings, kisses, kissed, mental hilled, and new toys play trill, pipe cunt filled, hands and hose huge lashed, forcing smooth honey, and eyes will glow like hoard wet money. I am hearing a lewd moon failing and cold-kicked cartoons reel where buildings cry and cry. Finito and boom. And you're not making me comment on that first, Intimidus Rex.
Well, Jim has still got his energy run with this as far as metaphors and illusion. Damn. Where once a sea of stains slides, then cold gray cunts will rain down. Where eyes suck salt rape and coil cut sails rise, a sweet grave. Oof. Pounding out the thoughts of, spoilage. Crash kids cry for grain, then glass hands, red eyes of brains. Emptiness, sea of pigs swells prayer, and so winds will frig sex on spit. There's a notation in that to sex on a level that kind of flies in the face of normality. And that next one, Idle Minds, Matt Ripped, Farmyard Veils, and Farm End as Lips Listen to Red Nails. Boy, that kind of paints an ugly picture of, yo, what are you doing with them farm animals? There's I think the thought that runs through this is there's way too much fucking, and it's fucking everybody, not just literally, figuratively, and metaphorically. As you hit, where horde guns leer, then gods come, will feed dance the city light, neon bands must light, blotted blurred midnight and digging, then dispels death for kindness. Ooh. There's a notation for death on the streets in that. Wavering wool men dress, boy, the upper crust in that, woven breast, splattering gold men press, weeping death, holy sin suffer swift, rope sanitized, killer bells. Notation of the ease of sending people off to die, and also the ease of ordering people killed. Hostesses heal guns, wise will drag dumb lips and feet until true death ends. Oh, there's I hit the thought to slavery. Paints a really ugly picture of death that is coming and how it is coming. The in the cities, in the fields of honor, on fields of no honor, in the bedroom, in the interim of thoughts winding across the internet, and the thought with answering with finito. No, I don't think so. Not yet. Not until something either blows up figuratively or luminescently and kills off that which grows like a foul stench. All right, Pam, now you get to. Aha.
All right. Yeah, there is actually a website called sexdawn.com.
Say what?
There's a website called sexdawn.com.
And what's that got to do with this?
Okay, I'm not just like Googling random things, you know. The word sexsawn, S-E-X-S-A-W-N, was in the right. I'm not just
I'm not like,
so boring, I'm going to go check out porn now. Because I don't want to listen to him.
Okay. All right. So,
but
yes, anyways, I do remember that
I think you made some really great points, especially like when you talked about how there's like a whole lot of how the sex within the poem, the sexual references represent the way people fuck each other on so many different levels and fuck each other over, and how it can be used literally, but it can also be used metaphorically. The two things I feel bad about with my reading was that I accidentally read plums as plumes, and I don't know why I did that. I also wasn't quite sure if I was supposed to say SSS or if I was supposed to hiss like a snake. And, you know, this has very just strong, visceral language, and it's a really ugly look at humanity. And sexuality in general. You know, to me, you know, sexuality was created as an expression of love and enjoyment. And we've started, this delves into the side of sexuality that is used and abused and ugly. And I like that he put, like he had halfway through the poem the word end, and then the poem continues on, and then he has finito, which as we all know means end, but he has it with a question mark, almost as if, is this the end, you know, or is it going to get worse? I feel like adding the question mark gives the whole kind of thought of, the whole kind of thought of when will all this ugliness be over. and coated killer guns will gas eagles and scalded children when once loud altars had burnished heavy lungs and grass cell smoked furies, men and masked folks move. I really feel like there's quite a few references to the sexual abuse and use of minors. I think I hear a dropping sparrow. It was a particularly poignant section, and the idea that, as it says in the Bible, if God will take care of, you know, the sparrow, will he not also take care of you? And I feel like this line is using the sparrow as a metaphor for those children, for human trafficking, for the sexual abuse of children. And I could be wrong, but this is just my interpretation of it. And that this part in particular is this person saying, hey, these sparrows are dropping, and what are people doing about it? What is God doing about it? So I felt really it's a pretty strong, poignant right, but that part particularly drew me in. Excellent write all the way through, and great comment on your part, Rex.
What we got next?
All right. Up next is... All right. And up next is Psalm of Sum by Dr. Sy. And go ahead and give that a read for us, Rex.
Mm-hmm. Psalm of Sum by Dr. Sy. Psalm of Sum, with the help of a good moon, there will be stars again, all the hearts crashing around us. We stand on the edge of the highway, holding each other in a lasting attempt at salvation. A night of terror, listen to the trees with their wisdom, older than I, on a gravel edge. I spent all my days in monotone memories of yesterday, holding my breath, truly obsessed with ideas, poetry, and songs, keeping all my blood inside my feet. We haven't a clue, I cannot deny, I am lost in this society, despised, so its lack of serendipity, so come out, freak. Hobos, bats, alleyworms, and pounce on their acts of normality, set fire to their Mercedes and BMWs, ransom their suburban homes, glue red crown noses on their Prada faces, make them join us to glorify with the misfits and all the losers say, amen. That's home. All right, what you got?
Well, first of all, excellent read. I really like how this comes across as the prayer of the misfit, or the Psalm of Sum, with the help of a good moon, there will be stars again, all the hearts crashing around us, we stand on the edge of the highway holding each other in a lasting attempt of salvation, a night of terror. You know, this actually kind of makes me think a little bit of Jim Morrison's poetry. It's got that kind of flow to it. I am lost in this society, despised so, its lack of serendipity. So come out, freaks, hobos, bats, alley worms, and pounce on their acts of normality. I like that this is almost like a call to arms of the poets, the writers, the songwriters, the people who think outside the box. I have to admit, I have never heard the phrase alley worms before. So it's interesting. That's another one I will eventually have to Google. I like set fire to their Mercedes and BMWs, ransom their suburban homes, glue red clown noses on their Prada faces. I mean, there's such the red clown noses on Prada faces is just such wonderful twisted humor. But it really, you know, it's got that bit of humor, but it also makes a really wonderful point that those people who think outside the box, those people who delve outside of the realm of so-called normality need to speak up and stop, you know, allowing all the square boxes to be built. And so really just an excellent write by Dr. Sy. I enjoyed this, and I actually hope we get to see more of his writing on our shows. So very well done.
Well, that had me thinking of a song by 10 years after, by the time I got to the bottom of it. It starts off with that. Was it Everywhere is Freaks and Harrys, Dykes and Fairies. Tell me, where is sanity? Tax the rich, feed the poor, till there are no rich no more. I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do, so I'll leave it up to you. Kind of, that's where I got down when he hit on to Glorify with the Misfit. Make him join us.
Oh, cool. And who is that a song by?
10 years after.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, it does fit that tone really well.
Yeah, it paints that notion of useful in the moment, but you don't know what you can do to help fix the situation. So you end up leaving it up to those who say they know how to fix the situation and only fuck it up more.
I like that. I like that. The whole idea of, nobody really knows how to fix the situation, but everybody wants to pass the buck and pass the blame.
Yep.
All right. Well, that is the end of the Bob Dylan contest rights that we had permission for. So I'm going to go ahead and move us on, see if we can get a couple of carryovers done from the last Dark Show. And the first one up is Cadence of Night by Becky Upchurch. And all of these were written to that particular picture that's attached to the poem. And Becky was the bronze winner. You're barely gone. I notice the pitch night sound beating in my ears like the cadence of new boots on old running paths, like two kettle drums rolling low to high timpani announcing your absence. I shouldn't fear these nights. I'm numb in daylight. You're gone, so I must pace the breaking with the beating, this rhythm of barely warm nocturnal boots greeting my solid streams like the caws of a crow waiting to murder my sleep. Awake, I feel the burn on the tips of your boots just as night descends and my eyes close, and like the crow, I remember. And poem.
Great read. Boy, this is a little dark. You're barely gone. So there's that note. There's almost impending disaster in that tone. And then that first stanza. Then the second, like two kettle drums rolling low to high timpani, announcing your absence. I shouldn't fear these nights. I'm numb in daylight. You're gone, so I must face the breaking with the beating. Well, that kind of hits on a sour note of the importance of him being gone, yet that absence still lingers with the thoughts that come with it today. As night descends, so do the crow as you remember the sounds of those heavy boots walking around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a real heavy thought there. Yeah, to me, well, I ran this contest and I had my regular rules. Plus, I told people, I said, don't just describe the picture, and please do not give me a parody of the Raven. I don't want that. And Becky, my apologies, did an excellent job with that. She didn't just describe the picture; she put somebody's personal grief, whether it's an actual personal story or just character story. She put an episode of grief in here and the kind of grief that comes, wakes up more during the nighttime. And I also like how she used it metaphorically, like the cause of a crow waiting to murder my sleep. And that was very clever with the, a group of crows being called a murder. So really great dark wordplay there and very well done. All right, and up next we have, and this, there was a only 8 rights in this contest, and they were all quite good. And up next, we have Peck Perceptions by John Coe. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Perceptions by John Coe. With crow-plucked eyes, bled brain to stem, no living creature worth its while, two souls spat out vile green phlegm, left rotting by a beak, pecked soul smile. No stand on earth may move to gain, or earth and worm to burrow deep, land's sovereign body fluid pain, leaves not much for to rummage creep. Gray eyes weigh heavy on moor's brow, red locust shells turn brown with rot. Time never wastes for whom needs now, but only match the mosquito's spot. Salt feathers pepper unbeknownst, its shriveling life pours, its outpour. Their pedestals are vain from boast, are tangled twixt the meat of core. Not one but shines within its grasp, the dragging death's most wanton eyes, as nothing hungers for a grasp, when air's not needed to a prize. Amid the scurries of death's zones, things always boil down to dry roots. Without much flailing overtones, death doesn't need a pair of boots. And poem.
Read there, Rex. You know, as always, John has wonderful rhyme and flow. That'll be our probably, I think, our last poem for the night. And the other three poems from the Into the Darkness will be carried over to the next Into the Darkness show, most likely. And see here. No sand nor earth may move to gain our earth and worms to burrow deep, land sodden body food pain. There's not much for to rummage creep. My comment on this was it was an excellent dark ride with wonderful rhyme and flow. I like how the visceral and haunting imagery in this ride reminds us that death comes to all and that nothing we own on earth do we take with us. And I also appreciate and enjoy the idea of death being a hungry scavenger without mercy. I really did feel like, you know, he did an excellent job of personifying death. But also, you know, like this is a dark rite, but it's a dark rite that has that reminder that we take nothing with us, that in the end it really doesn't matter because we all die. At least that's the message that I got from it. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it hits on the notion that it may be at the apex of the food chain, but everything gets fed upon when it's time, whether it's the crow, whether it's the worm, whether it's the ground, it's the maggots from the blowflies. Everything gets its just fill once death occurs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I like that they brought up how it's like the apex of the predatory. So, excellent comment. Well, this has been an awesome show, Rex. I really enjoyed it. And Julio? So,
well,
go ahead.
You're gonna throw in Twisted Tuesday since it's already here?
Yes, yes. Well, the contest is almost over, but people can put a write on the topic board that is up in Late Night Poets. We are asking for writes, new or pre-writes, inspired by the artwork of James Whistler. And Rex was nice enough to run that contest for us, so thank you there, Rex. And please feel free to join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for poetry, reading, and commenting.
All right. Well, I guess that's the end of the show for this evening. Join us again next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. And we'll do it once more. In the meantime, come visit everybody else we've got on air. And thanks for joining us, Fabla. And Jeremy, thank you for holding the board. And to all a good night.